Hi, I'm Tess Vigeland, and this is your Marketplace Money podcast for the weekend of December 16th, 2011. Tis the season of giving and spending and apparently breaking all the rules.
Regifting is okay.
What? Yes,
that's right.
You heard it here.
The experts over at the Dinner Party Download heard it from Emily Post, so I guess it's okay. Santa's buying lots of smartphones this holiday season, and if he wanted to, he could get all meta about it and buy them with his phone.
Basically, your credit card information is on your phone, and to pay for something, you wave it in front of credit card pay terminal.
We'll hear about the coming cashless society, which will lead us directly into the Book of Revelation.
Also, it causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell who does not have the mark.
Oh dear, what the Bible really says about cash versus credit on Marketplace Money from APM, American Public Media. Let's start with a small sample of the week's headlines.
Giant retailers Best Buy, Walmart, and Amazon have expanded their trade-in programs.
The stronger dollar today is weighing on energy and materials. Gold and oil are both trading sharply lower.
More than 3,000 people were killed last year due to distracted driving, but is eliminating all cell phone use behind the wheel the answer?
Oh my, well, I say yes. But you know what? We're starting this week with something completely different. As we make our final run into the holidays, we could all use a little help making a splash. Heaven knows I need it this year. Which is why I invited two of my favorite guests to the studio. Brendan Francis Newnham and Rico Galliano of the Dinner Party Download are here for a little this, a little that. Greetings, gentlemen.
Hi, Tess. I'm this.
I'm that.
Welcome.
Thanks for having us. We're happy to help out.
All right. So this is the season of giving and, well, sometimes spending a lot of money.
Even in this down economy. Surprising.
Yes. It's anxiety producing.
It's pepper spray inducing.
Exactly.
If you're a certain type. Yes.
Well, pepper spray is always a great gift.
Really? Effective.
Yeah, that's right.
I think you have to be on Santa's naughty list for that one.
That's true.
But you're right. I have now three nephews and two nieces. I mean, these are a lot of gifts. And then my sister expects. I mean, it's wild. So here's something that we learned this week. We have Emily Post. Her great-great-grandchildren to this day continue to publish a manners book. And we had them on our show. And this week, they told us regifting is okay.
What?
Yes.
That's right.
You heard it here.
But there are a few ground rules. The first one is you can't have used the word hideous or ugly when you first got the gift.
Oh. Yes.
It has to be a nice gift.
It has to be something that's actually not bad.
Okay, but can I think that as long as I don't say it out loud?
Well, I think the idea – this is about ethics, right? You really shouldn't re-gift something that you honestly believe is a lousy gift.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry. It's not
but
a
then
good manner.
Why wouldn't I just keep it?
Well, what if you have two of them?
Okay. That. Yeah. Okay.
And also if it is something maybe that you think is better for another person.
And there's another rule. The gift – first of all, it can have been homemade.
It can, of course.
No, it can't.
Oh, it can't?
If it was homemade for you, specifically for Tess, you cannot give it to Rico.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's sad.
So even if I don't like pickled carrots – in a can.
I think the idea is
you never gave me any indication you didn't like pickles.
I think the idea is if the can was monogrammed to me.
Yeah, you can't scratch it off.
That would be a giveaway.
That would be bad.
So those are the basic rules. But the important takeaway is that regifting is okay if you follow certain guidelines.
Okay. And you guys will have more of those guidelines on your show this weekend.
That's
right. Yeah.
Dinnerpartydownload.org. Blatant Whoa. Plug.
Hey, what a pro.
Thanks, you guys.
Okay. So that's tip number one. Tip number two.
Well, while we're on gift giving, here are some ideas if you do want to spend some money on an actual gift instead of a regift. First of all, you may have heard of the Steve Jobs book. You know,
yes.
Hard Not To.
It's on a lot of lists.
Yeah,
this year.
You do not need to give anybody that book.
Why not?
Because what about that book do we not know at this point?
Thank you, Internet. It's all been summarized.
The guy was a little meaner than we thought and also a genius.
And that's all you need to know.
End of story.
But while we're on the subject of Apple.
So you just saved us $25-$30.
That's right.
Right there. But you could take that money and apply it towards another often Apple-themed product, which would be an MP3 player.
Yep, now, on a lot of lists.
Now, but we've got a suggestion for not your average MP3 player. It is called the Echo Media Player Spin. It's a 4 GB MP3 player. It's very bulky and clunky. It is the size of an older cell
phone. Oh, can I have one, please?
Perfect for regifting.
Yeah. It's also like $25 to $50 more than an iPod Nano.
Rico, you're not giving us the reason why we would.
Yeah, you're very in the lead.
Here it comes. The savings comes after you bring it home. It is a hand-cranked MP3 player.
Like an emergency radio?
Like an emergency radio, but for a new generation of
a new
consumers.
Generation of earthquake victims.
That's right. A hipper.
Exactly.
A hipper. But it's kind of...
You can listen to black metal when the earth goes post-apocalyptic.
If that's what you
right
need
soundtrack.
To get through the apocalypse. And I'm guessing that within like 10 years or so, you will save the amount of money that you might have spent on the more expensive iPod Nano on your electricity bills.
But
or
you
batteries.
Will you have definitely dropped a notch in the eyes of aforementioned nieces and nephews and children. I mean, come
maybe.
On. This is like Velcro sneakers. This is kind of embarrassing.
I'm just saying it has a built-in flashlight. Pretty cool.
So you can look for your dignity with that.
All right. So we've got regifting. We've got a few interesting gift ideas if you
sure.
actually want to spend some money.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that a lot of folks are spending money on is parties.
That's right. Holiday parties.
So how do you keep that budget down? And I need to ask this personally.
One word.
Potluck.
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 Right?
Yeah.
This is a
oh,
tradition
dear.
That comes from 16th century England.
All great ideas came from 16th century England.
I like your corset test. That's
really
thank
nice. Thank you very much.
It's really fun. I love, and my wig is just beautiful right now. Powdery.
Needs a little more powder.
A little more, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But no, let's if you hold the potluck, people are going to bring all this food. They can't possibly eat all of it, and you're going to have free lunches for weeks to come.
Sure.
You're going to have leftover lasagna. You're going to have cranberry sauce. It's a brilliant move. And you can actually police the potluck. Oh, you're really going to eat that? Like you can fend people away from things you want to keep?
Sure.
You can even ask them for specific. Could someone please bring some filet mignon? Please.
We need
potluck.
That.
I'm opening up my house to you.
So what you need to do is actually send out a list of the things that people are supposed to bring to your
that
potluck.
Could be
exactly.
Great.
Rico, Brendan, always fun.
Tess, thanks for having us.
Happy holidays to you.
So maybe a hand-cranked MP3 player isn't your thing, but if you'd like to get a little more sophisticated with your technology gifts, John Moe of the Marketplace Tech Report is here. Thanks for stopping by.
Hey, Tess.
I have a lot of shopping I still got to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping you can help me out. I've been looking at what's going on out there in tech land, which you follow ever so closely, and it seems like there's all this hype bubbling up around readers.
Yes.
But there are a lot of options. Help me make a decision here.
Well, when you talk about e-readers, the conversation starts with Kindle because it's one of those chicken and egg things. It is incredibly popular and it's always screaming at you from the front page of Amazon.com.
Right.
So is it popular because Amazon screams at you or does Amazon scream at you because you're popular? I don't really know. Right now you can get a Kindle for $79. The $79 version, you will have to look at some ads once in a while, which is kind of a bummer for something that you own. But it's pretty inconspicuous. And, you know, hey, $79 for a gadget with which you can download and read books and has this massive, massive library.
And then I've been hearing all about the new Kindle Fire, but apparently there are problems with this one.
Well, it's first generation, you know, like any first generation product, it's got some bumps that didn't really see the light of day until it was out in the world.
Don't they have product testers?
Well, they do. But, you know, it's like the first draft of anything, you know, like would you buy the first model of a certain car that comes out or would you want to wait till they get it out in the world and tweak it a little bit?
No, but I bought the first model of the iPad.
Oh, see, there you go.
Okay, so I want to get to the games,
okay?
What is on offer out there right now?
Well, right now, everyone's kind of holding their breath because with the Wii, you can get a pretty good price on it, but Nintendo has what they're calling the Wii U coming out
later on
in the spring. Okay, it's the new version of the Wii, and it will still play Wii games, but it's, you know, if I was buying a Wii right now, I'd be a little nervous that it was, you know, just a few months away from obsolescence.
So if they spell the Wii with the W-I-I, what's the U going to be?
It's just W-I-I-U, which is really the shortest way I know of to spell the sound a fire engine makes.
All right. So that's the Wii, you, me, our, whatever. What about the Xbox and PlayStation?
Well, the Xbox is, you know, kind of top of the heap in terms of popularity, in terms of, you know, all the cool games always get built for Xbox. The Xbox 360 has been out for a while now, and there's beginning to be some rumors the next Xbox is around the corner. I'm not worrying about this so much because with Microsoft, they tend to announce something and then there's a lot of lag time before it actually hits the stores.
Okay. John Moe of the Marketplace Tech Report. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tess.
Anyone who knows me will understand why this next commentary is my favorite ever. It's about money, a man, and his dog, his poor darling misunderstood dog, who perhaps went looking for some homework, but found something else just as toothsome to chow down on.
There's a lot of indignity in being self-employed. You have to hustle for work, humbly meet your clients' deadlines. Of course, then you have to harass them to get paid. I thought I'd done it all in more than a decade of freelance writing, until the dog ate my paycheck. Now, he's a young dog, name of Russell, and all in all, he's been a great addition to the household, but as we've learned, he eats all manner of inappropriate things, paper included. We're also learning that he's a bit of an acrobat. I didn't leave this check on the floor. I left it on a counter that I now know he'd learned to access. He left about a third of the thing intact. He also left me with a dilemma. Have you ever had to tell a client you'd like them to cut you a new check because your dog ate the one they sent already? I mean, the dog ate my homework is more or less the paradigm of the lame excuse. So this was not only humiliating, it's the sort of scenario that could make a client ask, do we really want to work with this guy? Besides, this particular check wasn't going to determine whether or not I could make a mortgage payment. I seriously considered eating, as it were, the loss. I lectured Russell, this will come out of your chew toy budget. You'll have to settle for less fancy treats and fewer of them. He responded with a wordless request for a belly rub. Meanwhile, I had second thoughts. Times are tight. Every penny counts. Would I simply throw this amount of money in the garbage? No. So I swallowed my pride. And as it happens, the client was this very program, and the editor found the whole thing hilarious. In fact, she said it would make a good commentary. No wonder the dog seemed so unconcerned. His bad behavior wasn't threatening my business. It was a revenue opportunity. So if you're listening, Russell, forget what I said about cheap dog treats. You're getting a Christmas bonus this year.
Rob Walker is a contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine and Design Observer. Tight budget is tough to deal with at any time of year, but around the holidays?
Worrying about if I'm going to be able to provide a decent Christmas on my completely non-existent income. We have never been lacking at Christmas.
That's coming up after your calls on Marketplace Money from APM, American Public Media. And it is time once again for your questions. Helping us out this week is our own economics editor, Chris Farrell. Hello.
Hello, Tess. How are you doing?
I'm good. Are you staying warm there so far this winter?
So far, I am managing to stay warm. I'm not doing as well on managing the holiday shopping.
Uh-oh.
I'm not concerned about the budgetary side of things. That's under control. It's
the getting it done part?
Yeah, that part. Yeah. I'm feeling that little bit of that pressure.
You and me both. Good luck in the mall, my friend.
You too.
Hey, I wanted to get your take on a Gallup poll that came out recently that said that Americans say $150,000 a year is how they would define rich, which is very interesting given that President Obama has basically said that he wants to tax people who he defines wealthy as $250,000 or up.
Right. Well, my reaction was, it's about time.
Yeah.
Look, if you travel around most parts of the country, and I do, you know, $150,000 is an upper middle class lifestyle.
That's
in
a
most
lot
parts
of, money.
Of this country.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money. You can own your own home. You can take a good vacation. You can send your children to the college of their choice. You can save for your retirement and fund that 529 college savings plan and have an emergency fund. That's why it's considered being rich. And so much of the discussion has become about the uber wealthy, the 1%.
Right.
But we're a middle class society, or we want to be a middle class society. And in a middle class society, you know, it's not about millions.
All right. Well, let's go down the street from you to William there in Minneapolis. Hi, William.
Hello, Tess.
So you're right down the road there from Chris. What do you do there besides freeze?
It's not that cold, Tess, really.
Yeah. What were you saying to me earlier? It's kind of on the warm side. It's only 36.
36, 37. That's warm.
It's balmy.
Yeah, balmy. That's the right word. Balmy.
But anyway, so what do you do there, William?
I am a PhD candidate here at the University of Minnesota studying next generation biofuels. So essentially making biofuel out of inedible plants instead of making it out of corn.
Like what?
My research team is focusing on alder trees because you can grow them on land that isn't suitable for other agriculture. And so you're not displacing agricultural production. And at the same time, you're still growing a crop that can be used for biofuel production. So it's a kind of a win-win.
So you would fuel your car with trees?
Indeed.
When, do you think we'll actually, you know, get to a point where we'll see that?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I was just surveying some literature, and there is indeed some plants under construction for commercial production of the next generation biofuel that I'm talking about. It's not very well publicized, but this is moving forward.
That's just amazing. All right, well, enough about biofuels. How can we help you out with your finances today?
Well, I have a very pleasant dilemma to be calling you guys with.
Okay.
My parents got themselves out from underneath a mountain of credit card debt.
What kind of mountain are we talking about?
Right around $40,000.
Oh, wow.
That's a mountain.
How did they do it?
Okay, so I suppose I should back up just a little bit here. My dad was denied tenure at the university he was teaching at and lost his job there. It took a couple years, but he did finally find a job overseas. And they left me in charge of the finances. And at that point in time, I was still an undergraduate and fairly financially illiterate.
So you were in your early 20s when your parents basically left you to deal with their financial morass?
Well, I volunteered for it.
Okay.
Essentially, what it came down to is, instead of making arbitrary payments to all the bills, I decided to start making minimum payments to all of the bills except for the credit card with the highest interest rate.
Uh-huh.
And I focused all of the available money on that one credit card. As soon as that credit card was paid off, then I focused all the available money on the next highest interest rate card and so on.
So you've got $40,000 worth of debt that's gone?
Gone. 100% gone.
Fantastic. So then what was the next step? Did mom and dad throw you a party? Did they take you out to dinner at least?
I'm sure they would have if they were in the country.
Okay. We'll wait till they come back for that one.
My parents were doing the work, but they are in the very happy position of having a fairly substantial chunk of money in a online savings account.
So my guess is you're wondering where else they might be able to get a better return, yet with a little safety?
Yes, indeed. And I should mention that they are approaching retirement age,
okay,
but not quite there yet.
Do they have retirement accounts?
My dad has a pension account that he had to start drawing on. They each have Social Security benefits that they will start drawing on in about 2 years.
All right. So you want to know where's the best place to park this?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
When do you think they're going to come back?
Well, actually, they are back right now. However, that being said, there is a strong possibility that they might go back overseas to a different location for a different job. in the very near future.
Boy, that sounds like a very good idea. As long as you keep earning an income, stay engaged, live in a different part of the country, and you're getting paid to live in a different part of the world. That leads me toward being very conservative with this money. I know that the online savings account isn't making much, but that sort of anchors them. There are probably some expenses when they move, if this is going to be sort of their life in retirement. The way I would be looking at that online savings account is they can't lose it to some sort of European implosion or some sort of banking crisis in China. It provides them with a personal safety net if this sort of lifestyle of going back and forth to jobs overseas continues.
Okay. That sounds very pragmatic.
So basically, Chris, you're saying that being able to count on that money is more important than getting a big return on it.
I think it's a lot more important because, you know, there really are, for people who are older, there are really three things that they can do in terms of their retirement. Have a safety net, just like your parents do. Earn an income for a longer period of time, which can delay taking Social Security. And then the third thing is really to be very cautious and look at your expenses. Basically live within your means, not take on debt. And so if they're living with their means, not taking on debt, then I just think the real key here is this is part of their safety net. If for some reason they need to come back quickly, if there's an illness, all those kinds of uncertainties that are out there, I kind of like the notion that they have savings as opposed to at that point in time, all of a sudden saying, I have to reach for the credit card.
That's a very, very well articulated point.
So it's not only safe, but it's also liquid.
Yes.
All right. Well, fantastic. Thank you guys very much for the insight. I really appreciate you guys having me on the show.
Well done for helping your parents through a tough situation. And presumably that's taught you a lot of lessons.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, happy holidays to you. Thanks for calling.
And to you guys, too. Thank you, guys.
You know, Chris, we have kind of a related email question, so let me get to that. Tracy, also there in Minnesota, in Bemidji, emailed us that it sounds like she was in a situation kind of like William. She took over her father's finances, but unfortunately discovered that he had lapsed on paying some bills, ran up thousands of dollars in credit card debt. This is sounding really familiar.
Yes.
She now has
the story of a lot of people these days.
Exactly. Now, she now has power of attorney over her father, but unlike William, doesn't think that she's going to be able to pay any of this debt back. So she's wondering what the financial ramifications are of having that power of attorney. Does that make her liable for the debt?
No. And I was having a conversation with a local attorney, Michael Weber, deals with a lot of these kinds of issues. Having power of attorney does not make her personally liable for her father's debts.
Okay.
So I think that's really important. The other thing, though, however, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with power of attorney. And so, you know, there's a demand that you be very prudent and you be prudent with the money. And so even though she has power of attorney, I would be really talking with her father about what are his wishes, how does he want to handle the money. And I might even be proactive talking to an attorney, a real attorney, and sort of interview them, talk to them about her responsibilities, what her liabilities. But as a first quick pass, no, absolutely not. She's not liable for it.
Okay. So there you go, Tracy. Thanks so much for writing in. Hope that helps. Let's go next to Steve in Boise, Idaho. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Tess. Hi, Chris. How are you guys?
Very well.
Good.
And you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well up here in Boise.
Excellent. Well, we were just talking about, you know, parents and money issues. Anything that you've had to deal with along those lines?
Well, not so much on the parent issue, but I'm kind of at the same age of the parents. And my question has a kind of an A and B part, but we'll stick with the A. If the B gets there, we'll get there.
Okay. Perhaps a C later on.
Yeah, who knows? But it starts with a 401k. I've been at the company I'm at for 15 years.
What do you do?
I'm a field engineer for a semiconductor manufacturer where I take care of the equipment that makes chips for your phones and stuff like that.
All right. And so you've got a good 401k there?
I've got a good 401k. The downside is for 15 years as I put into it, I just did a calculation a few months ago and I'm at a net loss over that 15 years.
Uh-oh.
So I'm wondering, why do I continue to do this?
Well, first of all, we'll have to back up here and find out what you've been investing in. But how much are you contributing right now?
I contribute between 25 and 35% of my income.
Wow.
Okay.
Good for you.
So you're a good saver.
I did it basically because up to age 40, I did very little. So I didn't catch up.
Okay. All right. Well, Chris, if he's been losing significantly for 15 years now, that goes beyond just the crash of 2009. What kind of investments do you have right now, Steve?
Mainly equities. And I'm about 5%, 10% bond, the rest equities across the indexes. And
okay. So, Chris, that's where we're finding the loss here is that he is basically 90% in stocks.
So this is one of the reasons, and, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but, you know, why I always, you know, preach diversification and also getting more conservative as you get older. By the way, I think that you should be more diversified. But I would also be wary of taking the experience of the past 15 years and looking forward the next 15 years. It could be a lot better. The problem is it could be worse. You don't really know. I mean, the key and at least the one thing that I'm taking away that's really important is you have been saving. Mm-hmm. A good chunk of money for your retirement.
Yeah. Well, the thing I was looking at was, what are perhaps at my point in time some other alternatives where I might, instead of taking 25 to 35, putting it in, maybe make it 15 and put 10 or 15 into a Roth or something like that. At my age, is that a viable, or what are some of the other viable options?
Well, I think the Roth is one of the best retirement savings vehicles out there.
Yeah, and then you're diversifying among your retirement accounts as well.
Yeah. And, you know, so then you'll have some retirement money will be taxable at your ordinary income rate when you withdraw it. Some of it will be tax-free, which will be the Roth money. Some of it, you know, there'll be a minimal tax consequence when you cash some stuff in. You can do a maximum of $6,000 a year in a Roth right now and then going forward adjust for inflation. So you might be doing a lot more, but the Roth, perfectly fine.
Okay. Oh, well, great.
All right.
Okay. Happy holidays all, and to everybody out in public radio land.
You too, Steve. Thanks so much
for
the call.
Happy holidays.
Bye-bye.
Our number is 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY. Or you can send us an email through the Getting Personal link at marketplace.org. Chris, thanks so much. It's been fun.
It's been fun. Thanks a lot, Tess.
And do remember to always check with your own financial professional before you make any big money decisions. The average American will spend just over $700 on holiday gifts this year. At least that's what the National Retail Federation is predicting. But many Americans, of course, will spend virtually nothing. Unemployment and foreclosures have forced many more households to cut budgets to the bone this year. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman explores how some families are coping with the new reality of a holiday season in which they are no longer middle class.
I first met Shalene Macon at the Oregon Unemployment Office in downtown Portland. She's a tall, handsome woman of 33. And as I was watching her click briskly through her job search, she struck me as someone impatient to get on with life, which hasn't treated her so well lately. She lost her job as a high school English teacher in Alaska over a year ago. Her $400 a week unemployment checks just ran out. Now she's getting just $500 a month in public assistance. Yet when I asked whether she'd go to the local food bank,
kind of have an attitude that if, you know, I'm surviving, I'm really not in need. There's other people who are in worse situations than me.
Still, she's got a 13-year-old boy and a 6-year-old girl at home. They need winter coats and school supplies. And what about Christmas presents? How could she manage that? She invited me to come over to find out.
Hi.
You didn't have a seat there?
I'll make friends with the dog first.
See if it doesn't bite. Lay down. Lay down.
Macon's apartment backs onto a noisy freeway. She shares the single bedroom with her daughter. Her son sleeps on the couch or stays with his grandparents who live nearby. There's a TV and computer, a cramped little kitchen, and about the only brightly lit thing in the whole place, a Christmas tree. The 6-year-old daughter, they call her Bean, gives me the tree tour.
My mom decorated with me. Mm-hmm. I made this up at my old school.
What is it?
It's a heart. It's a picture of me on it.
The Christmas tree's the family's only splurge this year. $25 at a local department store.
We've never not had a tree. It's not acceptable for me to have a tree.
A couple years ago, Macon owned a condo and made nearly $50,000 a year. Then came job loss, divorce, foreclosure, and bankruptcy. She moved to Colorado looking for work, then to Portland, where her parents could at least lend a financial helping hand. Her 13-year-old son says compared to the wealthy neighborhood where they were living in Colorado, at least in this working-class section of Portland, his poverty doesn't stand out.
When we were in Colorado, we were two reduced free lunch people in comparison to people who might have 40-inch TV and might go get another one the next day. Here, I'm pretty average as far as getting what I want or need.
For Shalene, getting what her kids want and need is like climbing a mountain.
Worrying about if I'm going to be able to provide a decent Christmas on my completely non-existent income. We have never been lacking at Christmas. This year, it's been work. I've had a lot of help, but it's still really stressful.
The help she's talking about comes from her parents, who are comfortably middle class. But it also comes from the 13-year-old. He's into video games and sports, but when I ask what he wants for Christmas...
My interests are slimming down from a broader range of stuff, so I don't really ask for that much, nearly as much as I used to.
But that is a lot harder for a 6-year-old. I asked Bean what she's hoping to find under the tree.
A remote control airplane, actually. When I saw in the commercial, it's cool. It's called the Hawkeye Blue Sky. It's something that I really want.
So at $64.99 on Amazon, the remote control plane isn't even remotely likely, unless it comes from the grandparents.
It's not like I keep it a secret and make them feel like I'm just a stingy mom. So they understand that things are tight, so we can't do as much as we once were able to do.
This is how the wise 6-year-old understands it.
We were never rich. We just had a little money. We're not poor. We just don't have $100.
Reporting from Portland, Oregon, I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace Money.
What if you just walked into a coffee shop, got your drink, and walked out without ever pulling out your wallet?
It is kind of creepy. I mean, it feels almost like shoplifting.
Hey, I'm laughing because it's legal. We'll hear about going cashless and what the Bible says about it next on Marketplace Money from APM American Public Media. Cash is in your wallet. Probably not much, right? You may have more credit cards than dollar bills in there. That is just how we roll these days. But one day soon, you may not even need your wallet. The people who watch these things say we are moving inexorably toward a cashless society. And the best place to see that right now is on your smartphone. Farhad Manju is the technology columnist for Slate Magazine, and he's here to talk us through what we'll call cashless apps. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Let's start with a new service called Square. This was started by Twitter's co-founder Jack Dorsey, and you test drove this service. So tell us what it is and how it works.
So there are two parts to Square. The part that's been around for a few years now is a little small square device that attaches to smartphones, and that allows merchants, especially sort of really small businesses like people who run farmers market stands or food trucks, to accept credit cards.
I've actually seen this so that you can be at like the farmers market and just swipe your card through this little, I don't know, I guess it's the size of like a memory card.
Yeah, and it you know, it attaches to people's phones, yeah. So it makes it really easy for them to accept credit cards.
Hmm.
So recently, they released an app called Card Case, and what it does is it allows a customer to go to a Square merchant and buy stuff from them without doing anything, essentially. Say you go into a coffee shop, you buy your coffee and muffin, and you say, charge it to Farhad. And they see your name on the screen because you have your phone with you, and they just tap your face.
Not your actual face, but your face on the computer.
Your face on the screen, and that's it.
Well, I've got my phone with me right now, and I'm actually going to I'm going to go in and see if I can find card case, and maybe you can talk me through this here. Okay, I'm going to open that up. Oh, lovely. It's a leather wallet.
Yes. It looks very much like a wallet.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so I'm going to have to create a new account here. While I do that, why don't you explain to us what this is going to do for me as a consumer?
At the moment, card case is tied to your credit card account. And then there's a built-in directory in the app that tells you all of the stores where you can use your card case to pay for goods and services.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it'll ask you to take a photo of yourself, and that'll be the photo that'll identify you.
Okay, well, maybe I'll do that later after I've had coffee. All right, so pay with your name, open a tab at your favorite places. I've just asked it for places that will accept this near where I am. Hollywood Pies is 0.2 miles away. I think I'd like to go there right now. Wow, there are more here than I would have expected.
I see there's a food truck near me, so I can...
Oh, there's one near me, too.
So basically, you click on one of these and open a tab at one of these places.
Okay, yeah. So I'm opening the Hollywood Pies, and it says enable tabs. So I would need to click on that. Oh, yeah, it's requiring my photo now. So I'll do that later. Well, let's move on to, am I pronouncing this correctly, Dwolla?
Yeah, right? Dwolla.
And this is an online payment system between people. So peer-to-peer lending, I guess we call this. What is it?
Well, it's a way to replace cash transactions between people. Hmm. And it links to your bank account. And two people who have the Dwolla app on their phones can transfer money to one another.
So it's like your own Western Union.
Right. It works across different kinds of phones. And the goal, I think, with all of these companies is to move society toward this cashless and really frictionless way of spending money, that where you don't kind of think about the money that's being passed. It just sort of happens over the internet, and it can kind of track your purchases more easily. You have data about what you buy, and there is kind of insurance for your purchases where you wouldn't be able to get that with cash.
All right. Well, so the last service that we want to talk about is Google Wallet. Tell us about it.
So Google Wallet is a kind of a lot more traditional pay-by-phone service that basically your credit card information is on your phone, and to pay for something, you wave it in front of credit card pay terminal.
Mm-hmm.
And the other distinction is that it's not in the iPhone. So, you know, that's a big part of the smartphone market, and you know, your iPhone won't work with Google Wallet.
So what's stopping this from becoming kind of the de facto method of payment? If I could carry around just my phone instead of my wallet and my phone, that sounds great.
You know, it's hard to see that we'll ever get to a place where we could replace everything in our wallets with our smartphones. I mean, your driver's license, will that be in your smartphone?
That'd be great. Here, officer, here's my phone.
Yeah, it would be great, but I don't think people see this as a more convenient system. It's not that big of a difference.
Well, and of course, behavioral economists will tell you that it will make it much easier to part us from our money when we're not actually handing over money, because our brains... Our brains actually take a moment to think about it when we're handing over cash, but they don't when we're using a credit card. And I would imagine that's even magnified if you're just handing over your phone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely felt that when I was using the card case app. I mean, if people kind of don't have to think about handing over money or handing over anything.
There's no pain.
There's no pain at all.
All right. Farhad, thank you so much. This has been fun.
Great. Thanks a lot.
So after I signed up for card case, I figured, why not take it out for a spin, right? Well, it turned out Hollywood Pies was a pizza joint, and I needed to go out in the morning, so that wasn't going to work. But a juice bar? Well, that sounded just right.
So we're downtown Los Angeles here at 6th and Spring, walking into Sustain Juicery, and I feel very strange not having any money on me. I don't even have a wallet. Hello.
Hi.
So, what do you recommend?
The Green Monkey is great for in the morning. It's got lots of fruit, so it'll wake you up a little bit. And then the spirulina and kale, add it to it, make it a protein as well. It's a good appetite suppressant.
Let's try that. The Green Monkey.
Green Monkey? Okay.
Now, what do I owe you as you type on your iPad here?
Yeah, comes out to $7.50.
And my name is Tess Vigeland. Am I there on your system?
It is, right there, first visit.
And that's my photo.
Perfect.
Okay, so I don't even have to give you a credit card or anything.
Nope.
I don't even have to show you my phone.
Nope, not at all. So we have a picture ID, so everything can run pretty smooth. All we have to do is hit charge.
Okay.
That's it. Makes life easy.
As she blended my drink, I chatted with Juice Bar owner Brian Lee about how well this system works for him.
Okay, that is delicious.
Thank you very much.
So, do you have people come in very often to use this?
Yes, I have a handful of customers who are currently using this card case, and they like the benefit of not needing to reach into their pocket and create that sort of loyalty base, which I also offer 10% discount to card case users. Card case actually tracks the amount of times they've been here, so if, let's say, they exceed 10 times in a month, they'll receive a discount.
So it provides a benefit to you because it's another reason for them to come in.
Absolutely.
As we talked, Lee noticed that another photo popped up on his screen. Another customer in the store using the card case.
Oh, someone else is
Michael,
in here using it.
You just got on?
Okay. Did you really?
He just realized it, so he will definitely receive that discount very shortly.
So you're a regular customer?
Yeah, and I haven't been racking up loyalty, so now I will. I've been coming here for 3 months, and now they'll know that how often I come in.
A card case convert, and why not? While I was researching this app story, I stumbled on a community that believes our increasingly cashless society was predicted long, long ago in the Book of Revelation. Now, I do not remember this from Sunday school, but these websites compare credit cards to the mark of the beast, that the cashless society is a precursor to the apocalypse. Scary reading. Scary enough for me to call up a priest. The Reverend Father Felix Yeust is Director of Biblical Education at the Loyola Institute for Spirituality. Hello, Father.
Nice to be with you.
Before we go on, Father, Reverend, Your Holiness, what do you prefer?
No, Father Yeust or Father Felix is fine.
Okay. Well, let's start first of all by citing chapter and verse here. What element of the Book of Revelation are we talking about?
Well, if you want to talk about a cashless society, then the reference that most people take is to the Book of Revelation, chapter 13, verse 7.
Can you read that for us?
Yes. It's talking about the second beast in the second half of chapter 13 of the Book of Revelation, a beast that rises out of the earth. And it says in verse 16 and following, "Also it causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell who does not have the mark, that is, the name of the beast or the number of its name." And then the next verse goes on to explain that this number of the name of the beast is the very well-known or infamous 666.
So what this is referring to is that when the revelation happens, that those who do not have this mark, in other words, Christian believers, will not be able to buy or sell goods.
Well, that is the way it's often interpreted, but this is a complete and total misunderstanding of the Book of Revelation. The Book of Revelation is not something that predicts the future. To understand what it's saying, you have to recognize that it is what scholars call apocalyptic literature. Mm. It does talk about the struggle between good and evil, but it does so in very symbolic ways, and it has historical references, yeah, but not to us living 2,000 years after the author. It has historical references to the first century.
Okay, so the fact that so many of us are using credit cards and maybe even our phones to buy things, this does not mean that we are at the end of days?
Absolutely not.
Okay, I feel better now.
The Bible says absolutely nothing about predicting a cashless society, as some people claim. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if it did, the closest passage to anything that you could call a cashless society is not from the Book of Revelation, but it's from Isaiah chapter 55. And there, it actually seems to think of the cashless society as a good thing.
What does it say?
The very first verse says, "All you who are thirsty, come to the water. You who have no money, Come, receive grain and eat. Come, without paying and without cost. Drink wine and milk. Why spend your money for what is not bread, your wages for what fails to satisfy, and so on. This is a text which is basically saying that in God's view, maybe there shouldn't be any such thing as cash, but that's a good thing in the sense that everybody would be able to feed themselves or feed one another for free because everybody shares everything in the messianic age, in the ideals of God.
Then where does this fear of the cashless society come from?
There's a lot of fear, not only of a cashless society, fear of one world government is usually related to that.
Right.
But all of this is misinterpreting the book of Revelation. Let me just use one more analogy for you. The book of Revelation is really like the Star Wars movie of the first century. Okay? No, it really is, because it is talking about the struggle between good and evil, yes, but just like Star Wars was not meant to be predicting what's going to happen in 5 or 10 or 500 years, it uses, you know, what we would call science fiction, sci-fi imagery of our own day and age, you know, lightsabers and spaceships, whereas the Book of Revelation uses the imagery of its own first century original context.
Okay, so that would mean that in the New Testament, basically what you have is Luke, I am your holy father.
Well, I haven't run with the Star Wars Revelation analogy all that far myself, but, you know, in a sense, just to get back to that mark of the beast from Revelation chapter 13, the point there is not that it's going to be any kind of a physical mark, whether it's a tattoo or chip implants or use of credit cards, social security numbers, or things like that. They're just using imagery, the book of Revelation.
So safe to say you use credit cards?
I use credit cards. And, you know, actually somebody asked me a year ago, would I get a chip implanted into myself? I said, no problem. If it can be useful, maybe. It's going to have some problems just like anything. Cash has problems. Credit cards have problems. Even golds have problems. Whenever we talk about money, we have people who are going to try to abuse the system. So I might not be an earlier adopter and be the first kid on the block to get the chip implant. You know?
But they're not holy problems.
They're not religious problems. There's no moral problem that says, you know, we have to worry if we get chip implants or if we use credit cards that we are on the side of the devil who is against using the gold standard of cash or something the way some of these websites are trying to promote.
Well, Father Felix of the Loyola Institute for Spirituality, thank you so much for straightening us out on this one.
Well, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Well, now that we don't have to worry so much about the end of days, perhaps we should turn our attentions to the end of the year. It is the time when you need to take care of all that last-minute tax stuff, from charitable donations to how you're going to spend the rest of that flexible health savings account. So we've got a list for you to check once, or perhaps twice, at marketplace.org. And finally, to this week's Marketplace Money Piggy Award. Our little blue plastic friend is not going far, or I should say, did not go far this week. We revealed the winners here at Marketplace a few days ago. Some good friends came over and paid me a little holiday visit. Roll tape. So here in the LA studio, I have Liz Weston, David Lazarus, and Kathy Kristoff with me, and I have Chris Farrell joining us from Minnesota. And Chris, unfortunately, we do not have a package for you to open. It is on the way. It is in the mail. But I would like the three of you here in LA to open the packages in front of you, make a lot of noise because we're here for radio.
Yeah, let me hold mine up to the microphone so everyone can see it.
Chris, you can pretend.
I can pretend. I can kind of enjoy the sound.
A new car!
You are all four winners of this week's Marketplace Money Piggy Award.
Yay!
A highly coveted prize, your blue pig. Thank you all for a wonderful year, and congratulations on winning this award.
Thank you.
Oprah's guests get a new house.
Yeah, wait.
I'm just saying.
As soon as they want to pay me Oprah's salary, I'd be happy to buy you all houses.
This is wonderful. I'll treasure it always.
Absolutely.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tess.
By the way, we gathered all four of our experts slash winners to talk with them about 2011, the year that was. You can hear that conversation on the show next week. And that is Marketplace Money for this week. You can friend us and me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at Radio Tess. Next time, the picture of charitable giving in a troubled economy.
I plan to maybe cut just about maybe 10% of my charitable givings this year.
If anything, we've given more.
Zilch.
Yeah, it's really bad right now.
There's actually nothing to give. Just making ends meet.
Marketplace Money is produced by Patty Hirsch with Devin Maverick Robbins and Stephen Hoffman. Our theme was composed by Mark Governor. The executive producer of the program is Deborah Clark. I'm Tess Vigeland. We'll see you next week.
There's a lot packed into an hour of Marketplace Money. Check it out again on our website at marketplace.org or take the show with you. Download the show by clicking on the subscribe to podcast link and never miss an episode again.
This is APM, American Public Media.